Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is someone who's been on our screens for over 30 years now and is about to become Britain's best-known drug dealer, having joined the cast of Coronation Street as a menacing urban drug lord. You probably know him best from his 10-year run on 2 pints of lager and a packet of crisps, and previous to that, as part of the launch cast for Hollyoaks. Since then, he's gone on to star in Line of Duty, Broadchurch, and No Offence. And having started life in Stockport, he now lives down south in Buckinghamshire with his wife of 14 years, Michelle, and their two teenage children, Jaden and Renee. As well as causing mayhem on the cobbles, he also hosts a brilliant podcast with former co-star Ralph Little called 2 Pints with Will and Ralph. So we've got plenty to talk about, although technology is not our friend today. It's certainly not working in our favour. So by the time we actually get connected, Will feels like he sat through some sort of GCSE exam paper for computer science. Enjoy. Sweet baby Jesus. Stick a fork in me. I'm done. We are actually... I mean, Will, that was hard, wasn't it, trying to make that tech work?
Seriously hard. It was like literally two old people trying to work the DVD player in 1985. It was so bad. I'm just so bad with technology. I mean, people who ever listen to my podcast know I don't do any of it. It's pure wizardry. Someone else does it all. I just sit here and talk. That's it. So finally, we can actually talk.
Do you know what? I lost myself last night and then this morning on the way into work and then on my way home from the studio today to about 8 episodes of you and Ralph. And I love that podcast.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind of you, Kate. Cheers, love.
It's the ultimate podcast hangout in as much as, like, you know, like, it's really early this morning. I was going to work. I didn't have any conversation in me, but I was well up for joining yours and just leaning in. And you two have got such a lovely shorthand together. You know, that friendship is evident in the way you slag each other off, the anecdotes you share.
Yeah, I think the key with it is we don't plan anything, really. I mean, I have a few notes or topical subjects that I might want to include because it's current. But really, we just tend to just go with it. And the reason why we started it up a long time ago, I went to Silverstone. It was and Ralph was just there. We got invited. It was a random day, and I'd not seen him for ages. And as soon as we got together, the banter just started again. It was like no time had passed from the old 2 Pints days. I mean, Missus said you need to do something together because you bring out something in each other. So sometimes I think I don't know what we're going to talk about today, and then all of a sudden we go right off piste on some random stuff. But we try to just let it flow and see what happens, you know. And as I say, when we get guests on, obviously that takes another direction. But yeah, I'm glad it's going well.
I listened to Jason Manford today, and it was so lovely to listen to you talk about how you all met. Because obviously on 2 Pints, as you explain on your podcast, he was your warm-up guy.
That's correct, yeah. yeah, he started out as our warm-up guy, and that's how we knew him. He was one of the best ones we had. And we just loved it when he was on, because it's so important to have a warm-up guy in between scenes when you're filming that keeps the audience warm and ticking over. And because it's such a hard job. It's such a difficult job that Jason had, or any warm-up guy out or female has, whatever. Because the audience are not there to see them. They're there to see the show. And sometimes they're halfway through a joke and then they get cut off. And it's like, right, we're ready to go. And then, like Jason said, sometimes you're halfway through a joke you've been setting up and then they just cut you off. And then, so it's a tough gig, but he was brilliant at it.
Oh, it really, it was lovely to hear, again, how you all started out. I have really enjoyed the nostalgia of your podcast, and it sort of takes me back to, you know, some of the times that you're talking about. I'm sort of stood in a field. I remember, where were we, Will? I was quite drunk at a festival. It might have been V, it might not. Do you know what I mean? But I just have these flashbacks of you dancing around like
Bez. I've
got
a few flashbacks of you as well. Listen,
I think it was V,
because I've only been to Glastonbury twice, and I don't know whether it was there, because one was a horrendous experience where all the toilets tipped up and fell down the hills and we were wading through. All I can say is it wasn't mud. I was wading through that in my flip-flops trying to get to my car. It was horrendous between my toes and everything. So, and then they said the car park was locked, so I had to walk all the way back through it all. It was horrendous. Never again. But, I think it was V Festival. We'd all had a few sherbets and we was all just very, very happy. And I remember you coming on. I think you came on Night Fever when I was on that as well, when I hosted that all the years
That's
ago on Channel
right.
5. Great times, though, because everything was, like, possible. You know, it's like, wait, look at this. And you live for the moment. You live for who cares what happens tomorrow. Today's great. You know what I mean? It was brilliant days. I sometimes say the youth is wasted on the young, because you don't really know what you've got until it's gone. You know what I mean? You used to take drinking all night and not having a hangover the next day for granted. Now, if I have a drink now, if I have a proper drink, I'm gone for at least 4 or 5 days. I'm like...
Me too.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, if you have a big Friday, you're looking at Wednesday before you're all right again.
I said, that's just true that, you know, I think, right, I'm a working Monday because I'm going to go out Friday. I used to go straight to work on Hollyoaks when we all lived in the house together. We'd party till 4 in the morning. I'd be in work at 7. No problem. Bounce out of bed. Boom. Straight on set. New on my lines. Oh, no, you know, it's terrible now.
Can't do it now.
No. I literally count the glasses of wine.
And it's not so painful now that our children aren't so young. But do you remember, the number of Saturday mornings and Sunday mornings I've been stood at football matches just dying on my feet with all the other hungover parents.
Yeah, and also the guilt that comes with it. If you don't go, the guilt isn't worth it. Because I remember I was out in Manchester. I went out and took a couple of my friends to the Man United game. It was Man United against Liverpool. They were Liverpool fans. I got us some tickets. We was in the box, free drinks and all that, straight down the neck. We was out all night in Manchester. And the next day, my son had a football match at about 1 in the afternoon. And I was in Manchester and it was down south. So it was a 3-hour drive. And I had to get up and drive all the way just to stand by the side of a pitch to watch an under-14 football match. I don't even know if he appreciated the effort. I was just like, do you understand what I've had to go through to be here? Oh, it was horrendous. The worst drive ever.
And now, of course, you've got a huge schedule in front of you with Corrie. Because I've never seen you. I mean... The last thing I watched you in, because I watched Broadchurch in lockdown, never seen it before. You're bloody brilliant in it. You really were. And as someone that knows you, I was just like, you know, that's not Will. Of course it's not. He's an actor, you idiot. But, you know, you were stunning in that. But I can't ever imagine you being an urban, drug-dealing asshole. But you are.
Thanks, yeah. I think that's the best description of my character anyone's ever done. But, yeah, I'm... It was what attracted me to it a little bit. I mean, I always said, if Coronation Street ever come asking, I'll do it. You know what I mean? Obviously, I don't want to go and stay in it for 5 to 10 years. You know what I mean? Because I like to bounce off and do loads of different things. But they came in and they said, is this character? And straight away I said yes, because it was it's a challenge for me, and it's also something different. And if you go into a soap like Coronation Street, you want to go and make a bit of a splash. You want to go and create a few waves and playing this character.
Yeah.
We'll do that a little bit, and it's interesting for me to play because he is an ultimate real baddie. I mean, he's horrendous. He gets innocent kids and parents to sell drugs for him, and the reason why he does that is because they're under the drug squad's radar. they won't be watching them, and he creams the profits, and if they get caught, they get arrested. And it's horrible. And you know, there's people out there that do that. So, you know, it's a real character, and I'm enjoying playing it. And I'm dead chuffed for my mum, because she's waited 32 years for me to be in Coronation Street. So all the jobs I've done, all the career, and everything I've done, Corrie, she just said when I was 12, when I started acting, I just want him to be in Cora. That's all I want. I'll be over the moon. So finally, I'm walking down the... Well, I'm on the street on Friday, 12th of March.
That takes me perfectly to my first question to you, because I know that your mum has always used Corrie as her yardstick for your success. Like, if you can do Corrie, she's happy. I wondered, how has your measure of success changed as you've got older? And what have been the other big successes for you and turning points?
I think it was just when I was a kid, starting out, I was 12 years old, there was an acting agent that was opening their doors and their books to people who... People who didn't go to drama school, or we couldn't afford to go. I'm a working class family, you know. We come from a council estate. We couldn't afford to go to places. Even Oldham Theatre Workshop, it would have cost money to get me there. We couldn't afford that. So, and I was just a kid that I had so much energy and confidence, and I just was dying to do this. And I saw it in the paper. They were doing an open audition, and I said to Mum, "Will you take me down?" And then you could just go in and join the queue and see if you had what it takes. And the agent liked me and took me in, and she said, "I want to put this kid on my books." And my mum and dad was like, "That's our son," you know. And then and I got the first three jobs I went for, just pure confidence and having a go. And then work just started from there. So I learned doing the job. I learned on the job, basically. I never trained. And and then that moment when I got the agent, my mum's comment was, "I'd just be happy if he was on Cora," because she thought, "If I get on Cora, then we're happy, we've done it." You know what I mean?
It's like the Oscars. It's interesting that you say that as well. That resonated with me slightly, because for our Christmas Day episode, we reunited some of the cast of Grange Hill. Right. And Lee McDonald was one of the guys that came on the show. Lovely man, played Zamo. And he was saying, you know, at that age, you just went from job to job to job. And for him, that was his experience until the jobs just stopped. But as a child actor, you don't realise the harsh realities of an acting career, do you?
No, I tell you the truth, and I don't know, it doesn't matter how this sounds, it is the God's honest truth. I never doubted myself. I never, because where I lived, you know, no one else did that. You know, I was the crazy kid that, you know, I used to take a comb in my bag to school and a water spray for my hair. I was a bit vain at school. I took a bottle of aftershave on an orienteering trip and it smashed in my bag and it just stunk out the whole area. And it was called Jazz aftershave.
Oh, Jazz. I used to fancy any boy that wore Jazz. Honestly, Jazz was my favourite.
How funny.
It was a white bottle with a drawing of a man in a silhouette, I think, or a black suit on the front. Jazz. Jazz. It smelled so good funny. Though, Will. I'll give you that. It did smell nice.
But I was just a bit of a different kid, I suppose, you know, and I just wanted to... I just really believe one day I'll make it, and I just had this passion for... You know, why can't I go and do this just because I live on a estate? And my mum and dad, you know what, bless them, they stuck by me and they let me live and try and fight for my dreams. And, you know, that's why I got a chance
so
to do
important.
It because they you need support, you know. And a lot of luck along the way, but yeah.
Well, I don't know about luck. You've got to have a bit of talent as well. Don't do yourself down.
I'm a lot better now. I used to panic about things a lot, even when... Because I was sort of flattered by my own success in a way, because after I did Hollyoaks, which was my break, into mainstream, because then you're in magazines and you're in papers and you're in billboards and all of a sudden fame and all these things. And I was only 19 and I'd gone from zero to 100 overnight. And it took me a while to deal with that. And also, who am I now? You know what I mean? And then all of a sudden, you know... The drive to want to achieve more is why I left Hollyoaks, because I did it for 2 years and I thought, if I stay here for much longer, I might not ever get to leave, or I might not get to do other things. And my mum and dad said, "Do not leave Hollyoaks. You might never work again." And I said, "If I don't leave, I'll never know. So I have to." And I think it was a risk that I took, and it worked, but it was a risky move. And I had balls to do that at the time. And then as time went on, the confidence of me having that ball sort of went, and I was sort of panicking about what if I don't work? Rather than I will, it started to go into what if I don't work? Yeah. I've got kids now, you know, and I've got bills to pay. I didn't care about money when I was. It was success that drove me and making my parents proud and my family and, you know, and then. But once you start getting into property and having family, and then all of a sudden your priorities are them, and then you think, God, I'm in it's a dodgy business to be in because there's no guarantees. If the phone doesn't ring, you don't work, and then it's like, how long do I wait before I start saying yes to the things that I didn't really want to do before, or other opportunities? You think, if I say no to that, what if nothing else comes? And all these panics started to happen. And then just recently, a lot of things happened to me personally, and I realised there's a lot more to life to worry about. And I just grab life by the scruff of the neck now and just try and enjoy the simple things and the things that I can control. Don't worry about the things you can't, because you'll never will control them. So I've sort of settled a bit more now. I've got a bit older.
Yeah, I really, really understand that. I was exactly the same. You panic, you freak out. It's anxiety, actually. We just didn't call it that back then. You know, lying awake at night, tight chest. What if that got catastrophizing over things? What if that, you know, what if I never work again? That was a very real and present fear, especially when you have got kids to provide for. And I don't know how I've managed to put that into a much healthier place, but I have. And how do you think you've done it for you?
I don't know whether it's an age thing, but I think it's got a lot to do with losing my father last year.
I'm so
changed.
Sorry to hear that, Will.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's still tough, really hard. And I know a lot of people have been going through a lot of things that would be tough in normal circumstances, but in this pandemic, to lose somebody when you can't be with them is just horrendous, because you can't change it. It's unreversible. And the simple things like being able to be with them at that moment, or to be able to give them a hug when they're going through something and you have to watch them through a window or sit at the back of a garden, just doesn't seem right. But with all that, out of the back of it, I didn't want to sink, because I've done it before. My sister passed away. I sunk a bit and I went a bit downhill and I drank too much. I got into gambling a bit and just chasing highs as you do, you know, and I was a bit depressed and I didn't know it. And I saw the signs this time and I thought, you know what? He lives in me now. And the start of this year, I just thought, I don't care. Listen, whatever happens, I've been through that. He lives in me. I'm going to make him proud whatever I do. So whether it, you know, even if it, whatever it is, it doesn't have to be massive. I stop chasing them big things. Just if something comes your way, grab it. You know, enjoy it for what it is. Stop looking for what if that, or if I do that, will that damage that? Or, you know, my agents, if you do that, you know, that might damage your drama career. And if you do the drama, then you won't get much comedy. And if you do singing, you can't act at all. All them conversations. I just say, I don't care. I'm going to do what I want to do. And I don't care what anyone else thinks. And stop worrying about that. So I just sort of tried to start this year with a clean slate and go, I'm just going to go and enjoy my life and go for walks and look at animals in fields, which is very strange, but I do that quite a lot now, just because it's something that clears my mind. You know what I mean? Just simple things in life.
So a lot to process everything that you've been through, and mindful of looking after your mum as well and having already had that loss with your sister. It's a lot, Will. It is a lot. I hope you're all looking after each other.
Yeah, of course. My mum is the priority. She's on her own now, and she lost her brother as well just before Christmas.
God.
It's been really tough. It's just, do you know when things start happening and going wrong, you don't want the phone to ring. And it just seems to all come at once. But I think what I'm trying to do is be mindful and how grateful I have to have my children and my family and the life I have. I'm blessed to have my health. And I'm trying to see the simple things in life as the most important to me now. And I think, hopefully, out of lockdown, that's what I would like to change, I suppose, that we start taking things that we took for granted. We sort of enjoy that and we sort of appreciate that. And be better people to each other. Just be nicer to each other, you know. And I think now we've learned to appreciate that we need social interaction. So just be nicer to each other. And that's all I would like, you know. I want to wake up smiling and say good morning to people and take that as, oh, that's a good thing that happened today, rather than thinking, what about this job? And, you know, stop shaking the trees so much and just go and enjoy it.
That's a really good way to explain it, actually. Stop shaking the trees so much. But you have had some proper standout, stellar moments on screen. You know, we talked about Broadchurch, Line of Duty, another fantastic series to be a part of, working with Paul Abbott. What have been the moments where, for you, you've felt really proud of that work.
It isn't really the acting, I suppose. I think getting the job always, I love it because it's like validation that you're all right. Because one thing about actors, we're all insecure. And I don't think just actors, I think you'd probably say yourself, anybody who's in the entertainment industry or business, we know how competitive it is. So to land a role and for someone to go, you, is massive to me, still now, because you're up against other people and sometimes it's not about your talent, sometimes it's whether your face fits or whether you're your right height or your right age or they might change the demographic. But that personal moment when you go and pour your heart out in front of a director and a, you know, a producer in a little room in the middle of London or wherever it is for that casting, that's all that matters for you at that moment. And for someone to say, yes, you've got that job, that's to me still like the first time I ever got a job, and I burst into tears when I first got Children's Ward at 14. It was like, oh, I'm good enough then. That means I can do this. You know, because you don't know. I mean, I know I'm confident and all that sort of stuff and I'll give it me all and I'm driven, but someone else has to make that decision on you. It's not your choice to get that job. So for someone to go, yes, you, it gives you that little boost to go, I'm all right, you know, I'm doing okay. And in the professional world, it's... So for me, every job I get, I'm flattered for someone that said, yes, him. And... You know, I've had to graft for everything I've got, as everybody does in this industry. But role-wise, I don't know. I mean, when I played in Broadchurch, I think that's probably the most different role I'd played up to that point. And for him to take a gamble on me, a risk, which I knew it wasn't a gamble, but nobody thought I would play a character like that, because it's the opposite of me.
Yeah, but also they did exactly the same with Pauline Quirk. Yeah, she's a menace. Yes. She's horrible. Yeah. You wouldn't leave your kids with her, put it that way.
Yeah, I thought that was what was brave about the show, that they did that. They took people who they might have seen on TV before, which can sometimes go against TV programmes, because if you have too many recognisable faces, then people sometimes don't buy into the character, because they go, oh, that's just Pauline from Birds, or that's Will from Two Pints of Lager and a Packet of Crisp, or, you know, whatever it might be. I'll tell you that there's one story I'll tell you. When I did a thing called The Street, and it was my first gay role. And Terry McDonough was directing, and he's a fantastic director. And he went on to direct Breaking Bad and worked for Jerry Bruckheimer and stuff like that. And he was a cameraman on Hollyoaks when I started out. So he remembered me, and he wanted to work with me again. And The Street came around, I don't know if anyone's watched The Street. It was a phenomenal series. And it had individual stories, and it was my... It was a gay role that they wanted me to play. And I went up for it. And the director, Terry, kept saying, I want Will for this part. We need a masculine man to play this part. Because it was about two builders getting together on a building site when they go up working away together. And my character was openly gay. And he saw something in another character, which was Vincent Regan, who's a movie star. And so it was two men. And that... That's what he wanted, but the channel fought him right to the end. No. We don't want two masculine men. And Terry, he's a gay man himself, said, this is what will make it work. Rather than you have a guy that's obviously, you know, whether it be overly camp or obviously homosexual, it's too on the nose. And he fought, and he actually threatened to leave and not do the job if I didn't get the job. And he fought.
Wow.
And they give it me, and it's as if to say, it's on your head be it, thinking I wouldn't be able to do it. And that was for me, for someone to do that for me and fight for me like that, I was overwhelmed. And also, I just thought, right, now we'll show them. And it went on to win an Emmy in America.
Wow. You know?
So when you answer to your question, that probably as a story, as a part, for someone to do that for me, it was massive, you know, and it was a big turning point in my career, because, you know, other than that, I'd done quite jokey parts and this and that, and it was a very straight, honest drama, a phenomenal writer, and that was a massive part for me, for someone to do that for me. I'll tell you, while I'm on that subject, though, I'll tell you a funny story. We were filming the scenes, me and Vincent Regan, and we'd never done a gay kiss or anything like that, and it was very full on, you know, I was naked and stuff in it. There's a scene where we're sharing a room together, and my character is openly gay, is going to approach Vincent, who's in his bed, in the night, and I have to get out of my bed, and I stand in front. So the camera's behind me, so I stand in front of the camera, so you can just see me bum in front of the camera, and then I set off and go to get in bed with him, and then he freaks out, and that's the scene basically. And he goes, "I'm not like that. I'm not like you." And then obviously we end up getting it on further down the line. But the scene goes, so he goes, right, action. I get out of the bed and I stand just across in front of the camera. So it's just me bum and me back. And then I set off to approach the bed and the director goes, cut. And I went, what, what? He went, your ass looked nervous. I went, what do you mean? He said, just as you set off, your bum went and so squeezed together. He said, you're gay, you wouldn't be nervous. I went, right, so I'm thinking, do the scene. Relax your ass. Relax your ass. I've never been told my ass looked nervous before.
That's amazing.
Yes, true story.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Listening to you and Ralph revisit some of your friendliest and funniest moments of shared history, I wondered if you could share with me today just a couple of key moments that you would revel in revisiting in terms of nostalgia. Not with him necessarily, from any part of your life, but just if you had a chance to go back and, I suppose, jump back into those moments, what would they be?
Oh, wow. That's a tough question. I suppose when I got Hollyoaks, that was the start of everything. I was 19 years old, just a head full of dreams, you know, and jumping. When I got that role, I met Nick Pickard, you know, and Jeremy Edwards, and we lived together in a house for 2 years. And it was some of the best times of my life. We just had no worries. We had a little bit of money in our pocket. We were on telly. And we had at least one party a week. Everybody came to our house. So the girls lived at one house at the top of the road. We had this little private road. We lived at the bottom of the house. And we just partied and had just freedom. We didn't think nothing of, you know, as I say before, we getting up for work in the morning wasn't a problem because we were young enough to bounce back. And every day was exciting. Every day there was some stuff. It was like being a student with money. Do you know, just everything's going on. No one cared.
You did a great job, yeah.
We had two pool tables. We had two PlayStations going off. We had tournaments. We had a bouncy castle. I don't know why, but we had a bouncy castle for the parties in the garden. Yeah, people used to sleep on it. Stupid. We just, it was weird. It was just, you'd come home at the end of the day and there'd be four lads who all lived together and anything would be possible what was going to happen that night. It was just brilliant times. And I'd love to go back and relive that for a week, I suppose. And just to have that again, because you know it's gone now. And just that feeling, you can't get back. You just, because everything's in front of you. You haven't experienced it yet. I mean, I'd experienced living in Bredbury in Stockport on a council estate with my mates playing football and just messing around and just dreaming of this life. And then once you get it, it was just magic. It was like, wow. Wow, I'm on that. I used to drive past the billboard and I was on it. I was going, that's me. I remember I got offended once because someone had drew a pair of glasses on my face, you know, on the side of the bus stop. But just them moments, I suppose, I mean, it's just that feeling of freedom and pure anything's possible and the dream of everything was coming true, all my dreams. So that feeling, I'd like to go back and revisit that. And be in that house with them boys.
It must have been, because you were three hot to trot. I mean, good-looking guys on a hit show, living your best life. I mean, I get it. It doesn't get any better than that. And to go back and have that energy and that sense of optimism again would be lovely, wouldn't it? Because I remember always feeling energetic and optimistic, and I really struggle on both of those fronts these days.
Yeah, especially with the energy.
God, yeah.
I make noises when I bend down to pick some up. I do that now. I've got noises. Yeah. I've got my knees don't work much anymore. It's just, it's weird because I don't mentally, I love life. And I'm mentally sort of still quite young-minded, but my body doesn't do the same as it used to do. You know, I can't bounce back as quick anymore. And, you know, I haven't got as much energy, but I really do try. My wife is 100% convinced I've got ADHD, but I was never diagnosed with it because I find it hard to stay still.
Yeah, you do jump around a lot, don't you?
I do. There's a young boy in me still trying to get out.
Hold on to him, Will. Hold on to him. That's what I say.
Stay young for as long as we can. That's what I say.
So you want to go back and revisit those heady, beautiful, hedonistic days of starting out in Hollyoaks. Any other kind of key moment in your life that you'd like to, even if you just go back for 24 hours and do it again?
I don't know. I remember, when Two Pints finished, I got very emotional, actually. We were filming in front of a live audience, and because Two Pints was filmed in front of a live audience, it was like doing theatre every week. That feeling of walking out, the energy, because you'd rehearse all week. We'd rehearse 10 o'clock till 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we used to still complain it was too early, because that's what you were like, weren't you? One way to make an actor complain, give him a job. So it was great. And then Friday night, you go in, rehearse, and then you'd be in the makeup room, you hear the audience coming in and the buzz, and you get the adrenaline rush and the nerves. And you'd walk out, and because they're there to watch your show, you know, it was like everyone's cheering, and you do the show, you have a real good laugh doing it, people are enjoying it, and then we'd all go out afterwards and celebrate, and we'd be every Friday, we'd all go out as a cast, and, you know, it's a shame, because once you finish filming something like that, it stops, you know, you say, we'll stay in touch, will we? And it just, you all sort of go away to your own lives.
Life gets in the way. I really understand that, because I'm trying to remember what year it would have been. But at the peak of Friends being a huge success, and they shot in much the same way you did, rehearsed a week and then shot in front of a live studio audience. And very few shows are shot like that these days, certainly post-COVID. So I had this brilliant assignment, and I'd spent months setting it up, where I got a gig to go out and cover the making of one episode of Friends from the writer's room to the edit. And it was, and I wrote about it for both Marie Claire and the Sunday Times. And we did this big cover shoot with this brilliant photographer called Patrick D. Marchelier, with the three female cast members. But it was extraordinary. And coming home from that trip was like the biggest holiday come down ever, because the excitement and the energy of watching something begin, you know, with the writers mapping it out and then the cast getting it on its feet and being in those rehearsal rooms was so exciting. And then like we'd go out for lunch and they were so welcoming of me. The first day on set, I had to go in the clothes that I'd flown in because my bags had got lost. And Jennifer Aniston, God love her, bought in a set of clothes for me from home. Now, the fact that she thought they would fit was the greatest compliment any other woman has ever paid me.
Wow.
Which was so kind of her. And then they'd say, come and join us for lunch. We're going to go and sit in the sun. And you know, like on those massive lots at Warner Brothers, you could have, there were so many other things going on there. Lots of films, lots of TV shows. So we'd go in, we're set out one day in the sun. And I think Courtney Cox called over. She goes, oh, there's my friend George. And like, George, come here. And he comes over and it's George Clooney.
Wow.
We had this mad, amazing magic carpet ride week is probably the best way to describe it. And then I watched the show go through to the edit and I come back on the plane and I start transcribing my interview and I'm, had a lovely time. But then I just think, I want to do that all day, every day, every week. And even just as an observer. So to have that for 10 years, which is what you did with Two Pints, that must have been incredible.
Well, I'll tell you what, though. That is, I'm glad that you said they were welcoming because there was a few stories around when that English... Remember the English actress went in who played Ross's partner? There was an English actress
Helen
that
Baxendale.
Went in. And apparently, well, the word around the campfire was they didn't treat her very nice and she was an outcast. And now you've told me that story, I don't see how true that could be.
That really wasn't my experience at all. They could not have been lovelier. And they didn't make a habit of having a journalist on set shadowing that process. They would have had every right to keep me on the peripheries, but they really didn't. They were massively
That's
interested.
So nice. That's a good story.
Yeah.
That's a great story. Yeah. That's a great story.
My final question to you is about the cat, Will.
Oh, right. It's just typical, like, something like this could happen to me. The thing was, the cat had been missing for about 7 or 8 months. And it was a Bengal. So Bengals, if you get one that looks like the tiger, we had a white one and we had another one, both Bengals. And they're quite semi-wild. So I don't like keeping cats in the house because I think it's a bit tight. So I said, we should just let them run and they'll come back. And he kept coming back and then... Leo, his name was, and then he just kept going for longer. So he'd go for 2 weeks and then he'd come back. And we used to get a phone call from the old people's home. We've got your cat, Leo, and we'd come and pick him up. And then I think he just loved attention. So what can I do? And then it was gone 7 or 8 months, and I thought, well, he's not coming back. And then someone got a phone call, I think, or someone came to the gate from the vet saying, we've got your cat, Leo. So my daughter was over the moon. So I came home and Leo turned, and he looked a bit different. He was a bit more shaggy and a bit like he'd been sleeping rough. You know what I mean? And I thought, well, that's possible. And his meow was wrong. He was going like that. And I thought, it doesn't sound well. So I took him to the vets and they diagnosed that he had throat cancer, incurable. And they said, the best thing we've got to do is put him down. And I said, we've only just got him back. My daughter's over the moon. And I had a chip on my cat. And I said, they said, oh, it's Leo, definitely Leo. And I said, but that's not my address. And they said, the chips can get corrupt. And I thought, that sounds strange. And now I know they just wanted someone to put that cat down because what's happened is I've took the cat home. We had one more day with it. I took the cat back in the basket and I was honestly crying my eyes out because I love animals and stuff like that. And I put him in and honestly, I was that bad at the reception. The lady said, do you want to go into the other room? I was crying. I was in the relative's room sobbing. I just felt so bad that I was doing this to an animal. Anyway, I come home with the empty basket and I got the ashes, put them on the mantelpiece. And then, like you said, a couple of months later, we got a phone call. We've got your cat, Leo. He's been run over. I said, you haven't. My cat's on the mantelpiece. And they said, oh, no, we've checked. It's your address. So I looked and I thought, well, who's that on my mantelpiece then? Who've I put down? And it was Leo, and his back leg had been crushed and stuff. And the thing was, my daughter's going mad. Oh, he's back from the dead. Oh, Leo. And I was like, the vet's telling me I've got to put him down. And they said, listen, what we usually do with the injury he's got. So I said, I can't do that. My daughter thinks he's come back from the dead. It cost me thousands in vet bills. Oh, do you know how much it is to put a cat on a drip overnight? Unbelievable. More than a human. Honest to God. So I've kept him alive. We've looked after him. We've nurtured him. I've got a cage for him so he can't stand up on his back legs. The operation didn't go right. I had to have it redone. Thousands it cost me. Then he's strong enough to walk. Let him out of the cage. The door window's open. He jumps out the window. He's been gone ever since. I've not seen him since.
No!
He's gone. Gone. Used me. Used me. Cost me a fortune. He's gone.
Oh, my God.
And now I've still got that cat on my mantelpiece. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know whose it is. I don't know. I've got some cat's ashes. I don't know whose they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man. Honestly, I hope I don't see him again. Seriously. I don't want to, because I'm fuming with him. I do all that. And he just goes, seen a bit. Cheers for that. So, yeah, it was a true story.
You were trying to do the right thing and it ended up being epically the wrong thing. I just wondered if you got another example in life where you've gone into a situation with the best of intentions and ended up literally doing the wrong thing.
I've done it. I do it too many times. I do it because I do mean well, but my vocabulary, because I wasn't at school, I was trying to make everyone laugh rather than listen. So my vocabulary can be a bit blunt at times. And I try to be nice and say things. And then people say, well, you can't say that. And I did it. I've done it a few times. I did it with a girl at a party. And I think other people have made this mistake. And it's a genuine mistake, but I was trying to make conversation. And she was stood next to me at a party in Liverpool when I was doing Hollyoaks. And I was a bit nervous. I'm in this party, didn't really know many people. And I turned to her and I just looked at her and I thought, oh. And I rubbed her belly. I went, oh. And she went, I'm not pregnant. I thought she was pregnant. And I went, oh, It's the dress. No, I'm trying to talk my way out of it. It's the dress. And she goes, what's up with my dress? I went, no, it's like a maternity dress. She went, do you mean I look like I've got a maternity dress on now? I went, no, I've actually rubbed her belly. And she was just a bit overweight. Honestly, it was terrible, Kate.
Uh-huh.
I had to leave. I'd never even met her before. I didn't know who she was. I just thought, that'll be a nice way to talk to somebody. And I've, instead of offended her, I did it with another girl. When I first got with Michelle, my wife's black, and I didn't know much about black culture, but once I started to learn a bit, I started to show off a bit, you know, in situations like, I know a few things. And I saw, and this girl comes in the shop, this black girl comes in the shop, the local like corner shop. And my wife wears weaves and wigs and she has hair plastic, all different things. Anyway, I saw this guy, and I went up to her and I says, all right, love you. It's a nice weave. And my wife said, you can't say that. I said, I just complimented her on a weave. She said, you might as well say, that's a nice wig. I said, well, I was trying to be nice. And she said, the worst thing is, it's coming from a white man telling her she's got, which means her weave is awful because you can tell. And she said, you're trying to show off, thinking you know things and you don't. Keep your mouth shut. And I was like, I was trying to be nice. I was trying to compliment her. And she said, no, a compliment is when you don't know it's a weave, not when you go, that's a nice weave. I was like, all right. So note to self, don't rub people's bellies and don't compliment women on their weaves.
Has Michelle probably got like, I don't know, like a little catalogue of disasters that she's collected with you along the way, where she's just kind of go, no, don't do that.
Well, yeah, I'm just quite cringy, but sometimes I enjoy it. I enjoy, you know, I definitely enjoy embarrassing my children. I think, you know, that's part of my job. Once you had kids, I thought, I am going to be the embarrassing dad. I don't mind. If we go on holiday, you know, like it's, you go, as soon as I'm on holiday, I'm like, freedom. And you know when you go and they have like some entertainment and they go, well, okay, we're going to get a few people on stage. Anyway, I'm first up, me. Michael Jackson impressions. Anyone want to get up? I'm like, give it here. I'm on. The kids are like, don't you dare. Don't you dare. I don't care. Get me on that stage. I've had a few oozles. I'm off. I love it.
How old are your kids now? They're almost adults, aren't they, Will?
Yeah, my son's 16. So literally, God, as soon as I breathe, I'm embarrassing. He's 17, yeah, in July. My daughter's 12. She's 13 in June. I am embarrassing to them. Honestly, they don't find anything I do cool, no matter what it is. I did a Viking film called Viking Destiny I think it's called Of Gods and Warriors Over Here. Playing a Viking, all the gear on, sword fighting. I was Lord Sony. I was like the hero in this film. They wouldn't even watch it. I said, yeah, son, you'll like this one. No, I'm all right. I'm watching YouTube. No, I'm all right. I'm going to play on the PlayStation. Now I'm talking. I was like, you don't even want to watch it. They won't even watch it. Nothing. They not. I was thinking my son will like this. My dad's like a Viking. Didn't care. Embarrassing. But I don't mind because I don't take myself seriously. And I think deep down, you know, they laugh, really. But they are embarrassed by it. And my son, just everything I come out with, why'd you do that? I just can't help it. I love it. I love it. I love having my kids around me. And you know what it is? I mean, you must be the same. I'm terrified of them growing up and leaving the house and I don't have it anymore. I don't have the cuddles on the couch and I don't really get that much anyway now with my son especially. We had to develop a special handshake because I used to kiss him good night, son. And he was like, whoa, palm me in the face. We don't do the kissing anymore, Dad. I went, right, well, when did that stop? Now, it stops right now. And then I had to develop like a new handshake. So I came up with it and I said, listen, I've come up with a handshake. It's just between me and you, son. So when I say goodnight now, we'll do it. And it's our thing. So whenever I'm around, whenever I'm saying this is what we'll do. So that's what we do now. But it means I still get to say goodnight to him. And I still have that little thing. And I love my family. They're my world. So I just don't want them, you know, I want to enjoy them while they're here. While they're still not, you know, getting too old to want to be near me.
But I don't want you to confuse, you know, what the cat did to you with what your kids might do to you. They're not going to run off and only come back to be sort of, you know, sorting out their medical bills.
Yeah, well, my son only gets out of bed when he wants food. You put food on, he gets out of bed. 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you put a bit of food on, he comes down, what's that, what are you eating? It's like, this is dinner. What are you talking about? Where have you been? Your breakfast was a long time ago. So, yeah, he's at that age where it's hard to get him to get out of bed and tidy up and all that stuff. But
we turn into our parents, don't we, Will? We really have turned into our parents.
Yeah, I tried my best, but I'm definitely turning, especially with technology, I'm useless. I mean, I have to get my son to do everything. Dad's son, he does it in like 10 seconds as well. I've been there for about an hour. I know it's a bit serious, right, but saying this, but I think the education system's got to change because how can they have the same education system as what we had?
The
world's a completely different place. It's a completely different place. You know, if you go for a job now, they don't care if you can do long division. They don't care. Can you use that computer?
And they certainly don't look at your handwriting, do they?
No, they don't look at your handwriting at all. And also, why do they still teach French and German? Why not just teach Spanish? I mean, the way I see it is if you can speak
Mandarin.
Spanish...
Mandarin.
Exactly. Well, Mandarin's quite difficult, I've heard. I struggle with English.
Well, thank you so much. I really can't wait to see you in Corrie, even if you are a badass drug dealing hot mess.
Yeah, I'm not the nicest of people, but I am a bit worried about getting abused in the street because I've already been getting abused. I'm not even on screen yet. People are saying you better leave that Leanne and Simon alone. They've been through enough, and I'm like, I'm an actor. I've done other things. I'm not a drug dealer, you know. So it's I am expecting quite, because some people live and die by it. I'll tell you one quick story before I go. One quick story.
Yeah.
This is the truth, this. And this is when I realised that people believe soap operas are real. I did Brookside when I was 17. Played Jackie Dixon's boyfriend, Paul Howard, I was called. I had a van called a Passion Wagon. I had a mattress in the back. You can imagine what he was like.
God.
Yeah, it was terrible. And I ended up getting this... A girl pregnant. She was only 16, Leanne. So my character got her pregnant, found out, and he did one back to Manchester, right? And he left the show, right? That's it, done. So anyway, I'm going out to meet my mates, and there was a cut through going from my mum's house to round the corner to near where the pub was. And I used to go cut through to get there. So walking the other way was this woman, this elderly lady, a lot older than me. She's walking towards me. And as I get closer, she went slap and cracked me right across the face. Full-handed.
Harsh.
Yeah, and I went, you're doing? She went, you've got that girl pregnant. You better go back there. She's pregnant. She's only 16. And I said, it's not real, you potty git. What's wrong with you? She said, you honestly. And I got out the other side. I met my mates. And they went, you all right? And I had this big handprint on my face where this woman had cracked me. And I just thought, she's a grown woman. And she believed it. She saw me and thought, that's him. Whack. And cracked me. Terrible. So I'm just a bit worried that I'm glad in a way that I've done other things so people know that I'm not really a drug dealer, and I'm not really bullying them. I am definitely. I'm not going outside after I've been out on air on the 12th of March. I won't. I'll have to just stay in. Mind you, what's new? I've been in for the last year. Can't go out anyway.
Just as we're coming out of lockdown, you can't go out because you're hated.
Hated.
That's so you.
Hated. Or either that, or I'll be getting dodgy people coming up to me going, have you got out? What have you got on you? What have you got out? At festivals, I'll be surrounded.
Yeah. There'll be a queue.
Go and see Harvey. Harvey. Go and see Harvey over there. He'll have something. Go and see Harvey.
Oh, Will, it's so lovely to see you. It really is. And continued success in
Thank
all
you,
that
darling.
You do. You are one of the finest actors out there, and it's great to see you being challenged and stretched. Lots
Thanks,
of
darling.
Love.
Lovely to see your face again, Dan. I've not seen you for so long, but lovely to you and your family. Take care, darling.
You too. And anyone listening, if you want to have a really, really lovely hangout and chat with Will and Ralph, as they do, what's the podcast called? It's called Two Pints with Will and Ralph.
2 Pints with Will and Ralph. We've got two seasons, halfway through season two now.
And they're really good.
Thank you.
Please do. Go and join them. They're good fun.
It's good fun. Thank you very much. Take care. I'll see you at V Festival next year. Same place, same time.
Will, you're showing your age. They stopped doing that years ago.
All right. I'll leave it there. I'll still meet you. I'll just meet you in the field. I'll see
you in a field in Essex.
I'll bring my Gatto blaster. That's showing me age as well.
Do some body popping.
I'll bring me lino. We'll do a backspin.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Kate. Lovely to see you, darling. Take care.
Loads of love. What a treat to catch up with Will Miller. And you can catch him on the cobbles, being a menace, upsetting Weatherfield, as of March the 12th. But that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening. As always, the show's produced by me, Kate Thornton, with Richard Hatherall for Yahoo UK. Editing and co-producing is from Callum Goddard-Mucklow. And our music, as always, is provided by Andy Bell, whose back catalogue with Oasis, Ride and his solo material are available on Spotify and iTunes. We'll be back next week. Until then, try to drink responsibly. We always do. And look after yourself.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.